Have you heard about the new MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle? The MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle is the easiest, most advanced nozzle ever, protecting you from the dangers of diesel exhaust fumes. With its patented flex magnet technology, the Pro Nozzle easily attaches with one hand from a standing position, can snap on from any angle, and fits flush to the apparatus, saving a ton of space. And MagnaGrip is the only exhaust removal system that offers a true 100% seal. For free grant assistance and to learn more, go to MagnaGrip.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Scenes of Violence on this last day in August 2022. This evening, my guest is Brad Pinsky from Pinsky Law Group, also former fire chief of the Manulis Fire Department for 3.5 years in upstate New York. Crazy, crazy stuff has been going on for the last several months, and it actually almost feels like you're waiting for the shoe to drop for the next thing. I mean, we had civil unrest, and that kind of affected everybody, big, small. We had horrible riots in some of our major cities and some of our smaller metros. Coupled that up with a string of mass shootings, active shooters, the big one being in Texas in Uvalde. And now we're kind of, it almost feels like we're waiting for the shoe to drop of what's next. And on the show, we cover a great deal of things, especially within, I guess, the task level and tactical level of violent scene response. We dip into some strategic level, but it's always the response and the training thereof. And tonight we're going to take a little bit of a curve, which is extraordinarily relevant, but we're going to talk about what are the legal aspects associated with these responses. And within that, we're talking have a policy, don't have a policy, have SOPs, don't have SOPs. If the response is such that you don't have a great working relationship with your brother and sister agencies and you end up with one of these incidents, is that an acceptable defense to say, well, we approached law enforcement, but we never got anywhere to any kind of legal challenge based on the fire EMS response? So Brad is ridiculously knowledgeable in all facets of this because he's a lawyer. And he's also a firefighter. So the coined term firehouse lawyer is actually ridiculously appropriate in this venue. Brad, thank you very much for coming on this evening. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. I could do the whole bio thing, but I'm going to mess it up. And I hate to put the spotlight on you. But
once over.
Yeah.
No, happy to.
Give us the once over.
Sure. So, and it's the last thing I'm going to say is one of the things for this show that I'm most excited about, but before I get there. So, look, I've been practicing law for 26 years. I've been in emergency services for 32 years, my present fire department for 20 years. On the law side, I represent over 500 fire departments and ambulance services, a bunch of police officers and firefighters. We're here for the emergency services. And like you, I'm part of the fire engineering family where we write and speak, and I'm excited to go back to FDIC this year to teach a couple courses. We have our fire service radio show. But the thing for this show that I'm most proud of, and you were instrumental, is I have, to my knowledge, and nobody said I'm wrong yet, I have the very good honor of being the first fire chief for the first fire department in the nation that mandated ballistic vests for EMS calls, not just mandated to have them, but I mandated to wear them on all the EMS calls. And we, you know, there was kind of a reaction to the West Webster shooting, which is not far from me. It's about an hour from me, in Webster, New York. So, you know, the active shooter issues have always been a big deal. And for the listeners, you know, Steve's the guy who helped me outfit my department and teach us about vests and make the right choices. So, look, legal issues are a huge issue, and I'm excited to talk about them today with regard to, you know, these scenes of violence.
And I recall that moment where you had outfitted ballistic vests, and I remember we discussed it at your conference at Turning Stone when I came up to speak 8 years ago, I think it was.
Hey, a while ago.
Yep,
we got to get you back.
Which is a great conference, by the way. I mean,
thank you.
That was awesome. If you are in the policy writing business, if you are a company officer looking to develop and write SOPs, even at that level, linking up with Brad and his conference or his law firm or monitoring his radio shows and the podcast that he does with Kurt Verone, it's beneficial to you. It will be of great assistance, I promise you. Absolutely. I mean, stating a fact. So we got some crazy stuff that's been going on, and I think that the Uvalde incident probably is the most prolific, I guess would be the word, incident where we're discussing and or trying to shine the flashlight on responders for the purposes of liability, being discussing command and how that went about. Understanding it's the law enforcement perspective, but change the circumstance to a fire with a similar outcome, we're having the same conversation. So it's complicated, but broad strokes, because statutorily defined is different from state to state, but broad strokes, how serious is it for people in the incident commander role to understand what the legal ramifications are associated with their action or inaction?
Yeah, you know, it's a loaded question, no pun intended, right? But,
absolutely.
You know, and people are probably saying right now, why are we talking about law, right? Because we're talking about shootings and, you know, terror incidents and horrible times in people's lives. But that's what I want to point out, because the reason that we're talking about this is so timely. And look at Parkland, look at Sandy Hook, look at now Uvalde. What they all have in common are the stages. But the last stage is key. So the first stage, right, generally speaking, you got the shooting. Well, hopefully you got the preparation, but you got the shooting. And then you got the grief. And then you got the anger and the healing. Those go together. But what has followed in Sandy Hook and Parkland and Uvalde, what follows the anger and goes hand in hand? The lawsuits. And so the reason we talk about it is if you want to be able to take time and grieve, that's what you want to do. If you want to take time and heal, that's what you want to do. What you don't want to be is the fire chief or police chief. These are going to be the same issues. On the front of the news saying you didn't do the right thing or your people got killed because you didn't prepare. So the reason, very broadly, this is so important is because the last stage is the blame. And lawsuits always accompany active shooter incidents. We have yet to see one where there hasn't been some type of legal action. Uvalde's a great example now, but it's all of them. So, you know, even Columbine, go way back. We're still seeing legal action. So in, again, broad stroke to talk about this, the courts have held, and I want to highlight Kobe Bryant. Everyone's like, well, why are we talking about Kobe Bryant? But Kobe Bryant, the jury instructions to the jury are so important, and it addresses your first question or your first statement. Kobe Bryant, when they took pictures of him and his friends and his family. And the $32 million verdict, if you've been under a rock. The reason the jury found them liable is because they were asked a question, two questions. Did the fire department and police department allow the department to fail to plan? In other words, did the reason that people took pictures of the victims on scene, was that because they failed to plan or they failed to have a policy, or was it because they had a policy and they didn't enforce it? The failure to have a policy or the failure to enforce your policy led to a $32 million verdict. So start with very broad statements, but are true in probably every single state. If you fail to plan, or if you plan but you fail to train, you are losing. And municipalities can claim, you know, that, oh, we have municipal immunity. They lost. The Kobe Bryant's family won, and the county sheriff and the firefighters lost because they failed to plan or they failed to put in force their policy. And that's not the first time. So this one's a little close to home to me because it's my own department. But my own department and my neighboring department, we lost two of our brother firefighters on March 7th of 02. But what happened is one of the wives sued, and they sued the county. And I kept thinking, God, that's a horrible lawsuit. They're never going to win. And lo and behold, they settled for, I think, $1 or $2 million. But they settled after the court made a revolutionary holding, which is this issue. Remember that every single state has adopted the National Incident Management System, NIMS. Now, people think, oh, NIMS, it's so boring. Who cares about it? Yeah, you're going to care about it now, and Uvalde's going to care about it. NIMS is a non-discretionary statute, and there are four components of NIMS, two of which are establishing an incident command center, sound like Uvalde, and always following the incident command plan, the incident plan, and never freelancing. In the lawsuit against my department and the neighbors, but really it was about the county. The county had sent an individual who was freelancing on scene and failed to check in with the incident commander. And the court held, an appellate court, a high court held, while fire departments and police departments, well, fire departments, but same rule for police departments, can't be liable for discretionary acts, right? If you turned left and you should have gone right. In the fire world, well, I should have laddered this window, not that window. I should have hit the hydrant or not hit the hydrant, right? Discretionary decisions, you are not going to lose a lawsuit. But the court said NIMS has four components that are not discretionary. And for this purpose, especially Uvalde, right, where they're talking about there's no command center at all. That's a violation of federal law, and it's not discretionary. And the court says if you violate a non-discretionary rule, you lose. It doesn't matter. If you had to do it because it was law in this case, you lose. And we'll talk about a little later, Alan Baird in Lairdsville, about, you know, you can even go to jail. But let's be clear, for two reasons. One, the Kobe Bryant charges. If you fail to plan or you fail to train and enforce your plan, you may well lose. And two, if you fail, especially with active shooter scenes, right? The whole NIMS and incident command and interoperability and, you know, joint relations and look, the fourth component that's mandatory is you have to train in realistic scenarios with your neighbors and other agencies. If you fail to do any of these things, you and it led to a death, you lose. So, you know, to the beginning to your point, you darn well better have a plan. You better train on that plan. You better review the plan, and you better train with neighbors on your plan, or you are really facing, I mean, one, you're facing a bad outcome. That's more important. But when all that shakes out, when the shooting's over, when everyone's grieving, and the hate starts on who are they going to blame, don't give them that. And look, most importantly, if you train and have a plan, right? Probably things you talk about all the time. Train, have a plan, have policies. Hopefully we won't have a bad outcome.
Absolutely. And I look at this as another tool or approach in the top pocket to get people to the table. So if you're struggling with getting your brother or sister agencies to the table, you're struggling with, you know, governmental leadership at the city, county, state level, whatever the circumstances are, understanding and being able to articulate the legal ramifications of not doing everything that you just said, having a plan or a policy, training to it, reviewing it, training with your area agencies that are going to respond, mutual aid. Do you understand the legal ramifications of us not doing this and what will occur if we have an event and we haven't ironed this stuff out? As a way to, if you're not going to come to the table, I'm going to go to, you know, leadership. I'm going to go to the county lawyer or to the city lawyer and say, we're going to be in deep, deep trouble if we can't figure this out. And we'll get people to drag you to the table if that's what it has to be.
Agreed. And, you know, one of the things, I've got to be very generic on this because I can't reveal, you know, plans for active shooters that I was involved in, but in some generic form that I was involved in other areas, one of the things that I learned from the police when we sat down and talked to the police, we said, what are you going to do? And they said, look, first one's running in, second one's running in. And we get multiple police agencies in the one I was involved in, not necessarily in my area, but that I was helping plan and draft policies for. And there were several agencies, state, county, local, we're all going to rush in. And I said the question, going back to NIMS, who's establishing command? And isn't it, and it's not funny, I don't mean this, but isn't it ironic that in Uvalde, the whole thing is, right, you get the picture of the Uvalde police chief standing inside with a whole bunch of people, he never establishes command. And he says, well, I was never trained, right? Listen to what he's saying. I was never trained. You know what I hear? You're losing the lawsuit. Your municipality, whoever, if that's true, who didn't train you or doesn't have a policy on what to do, you lose, municipality. Uvalde, if what the police, they can cast him aside. But I'm telling you what's coming next are all the lawsuits on why did everybody run in? And the former chief now is saying, well, I was never trained to set up a command post. Holy crap. Right, you're a police chief and you're not trained to set up a command post. But as firefighters know, we're good at incident command, right? We do it every fire, every motor vehicle accident. We're good at it. You know what police are good at? Running in. And so I asked the question as I'm doing these policies, and I would encourage the listeners to, when you're doing policies, and I hope you have fire department policies, you can't do them in a vacuum. You've got to work with your police. The police are running in. So what I suggest is, and I'm not going to argue this point, whether it's good or bad, look, fire is not running in. And fire's got a bunch of lights, and sometimes we have easy ways to establish command. Let the fire chief be command. Let the fire chief take care of the outside scene, you know, blocking parents or whatever. Because the police are all going in. And I hate to say it, but I was proven right, and I got a phone call from one of the clients I helped set up this active shooter policy, again, somewhat from a legal perspective, because we talk about NIMS. And what they said is, oh, my God, you were right. Nobody set up a command post. I'm like, yeah. I said, but watch the fallout. But what's going to happen is NIMS is going to hang Uvalde's government if the police chief was correct that nobody trained me. It's not the police chief that's got a problem. It's who his employer has got a problem, which I think is the school district. It's a little weird. In any event,
I think
this is a big deal.
I think the police chief, that his defense is not going to hold water because, you know, we got ICS 100, 200, 700, and 800 as a minimum. That's requirements. through
and he should have
federal
had three
funding,
and maybe
if you're
four.
Part, yeah, if you're part of a school district and you receive federal funding, you can probably bank that ICS 100, 200, 700, 800 is a minimum, which articulates establishing command. But I think conceptually that was an awesome idea. The execution of it, those training courses being that, the execution of that is where we kind of fell apart. And I think we fire service being an untapped resource that could absolutely lend expertise in that way. You know how some of those NIMS courses, when they first came out and you had these ICS courses that you had to do, how many agencies had one person take the program, write the test answers down, and then that piece of paper got passed around and like, yeah, you can't click through it, but you know, when you get to the end, here's the answers. Huge fallout to having that type of learning platform. But in my humble opinion, you know, we operate at a tactical and task level that e-learning and computer-based stuff for when you're working in those strategic, tactical, and task level environments, they don't really teach you shit. I mean, conceptually, I understand it. But until you go out and actually apply and put some practical application to that concept, you're not learning nothing. You're checking a box. And it was mandated to check said box if you wanted to continue to receive federal funding. So of it is broke. And we've talked on the show over the years about law enforcement and incident command. And the law enforcement officer absolutely understands incident command and the dynamics therein. However, their day-to-day life is operating as a single unit and doing traffic stops. And, you know, you might get in a traffic pursuit. They're absolutely have command and control of their personnel during that event. They just don't establish a command. And the exigent circumstance or that high adrenaline moment to when things stabilize is very short compared to the fire service. So I understand the whole concept of, yep, we just keep throwing badges and guns until we get a report that everything is kosher and okay. I get that conceptually, but that's not going to work in a unified command environment. So, again, you know, looking at Uvalde, since it's the elephant in the room, what's the fire department looking at when it comes to this? This is a high-profile, high-threat event that is absolutely in law enforcement's box. But the fire department, I would assume, responded. EMS responded. If law enforcement hasn't set up those basic command elements, how much of a pitfall are fire and EMS in? And I know that can vary statutorily, but generally speaking, I mean, you're not out of the woods. It's not just, well, it's the cop's fault, right?
Yeah, and you know, one of my fears, look, without incident command, everything, right, goes to hell. And let me give you one example, and then I'll address a question. So I listened to, I think it was Parkland, because I was with one of the girls who got killed 2 weeks before. I listened to the audio, and remember they were yelling about the security guard, right? Very similar in a sense, but they were blaming the security guard for standing there, or the cop, or whoever, what it's the school cop, I guess, for standing there.
Yeah,
and
the school resource officer. Yep.
Yeah, and look, they didn't know what building it was, apparently. But one of the parts I heard was there's a whole bunch of kids jammed up against the fence, which was bolted. So they're trapped. They're corralled. A lot of them are going out the same door. and they're corralled. And if you listen to 911 communications, you hear, does anyone hear bolt cutters or have bolt cutters? They're trapped against the fence. We need the fence opened. And I keep thinking, where the heck is the fire department? But then I think, is there a command center relaying that message? Are we on the same radio? What is fire think their role is? And if you listen to all of these, because I do, if you listen to all the 911 of the school shootings, you will learn so much that now we know. And that's kind of the point. The fire service, the legal world, is not going to ignore something once you know about it. And if you knew or should have known and you didn't prepare, you are going to face liability. And look, fine, you got lawsuit coverage, you have insurance. It doesn't matter. That's not the part of the lawsuit that hurts. The problem is you are going to be the chief who didn't plan for the rest of your life. You are going to be the lieutenant who looked like an idiot running around on TV or running around on a scene because you don't know what to do. Imagine if we trained firefighters the same way to fight a fire. Hey, guys, listen, when you get there, just figure it out. That's what we're doing in active shooter situations, right? We're not working the problem. We're not planning. And NIMS, again, one of the four things that's so critical, mandatory of NIMS, is you have to engage in realistic practice scenarios with the other agencies. So if you are not practicing, I don't care whether it's tabletop or you're in a shopping mall or an actual school during the summer, if you're not practicing with your cops and you don't get this down so that it's instinctive, not let's figure it out when it happens, you are going to be sued. Being sued is the worst part. The best part, frankly, is when you lose or you win 7 years later because it's finally over. You don't care about winning or losing. You lost the moment you allowed someone to sue you and find something to say about you, like you didn't plan. Let's talk about for a moment Lairdsville, which all fire service leaders should know about. And again, people are going to be like, why is this relevant? So people are going to be saying, okay, Lairdsville. So Lairdsville, Alan Baird, it's 40 minutes down. Alan and I know each other very well. I guess I'm near all the bad things that happen. But Alan Baird was a deputy fire chief, and I'm not going to get into the whole thing. Let me just tell you what he was accused of. His lawyer ends up getting disbarred after all this because I think it was drug trafficking. So he got a really bad defense. But nonetheless, Alan Baird, as a deputy fire chief, was accused of using an acquired structure for a live burn, and one firefighter dies, one badly injured. They charge him criminally, which sent shockwaves nationwide for everybody who remembers this. I think this was in 02. It was right around 9/11. It was right around when our firefighters died. So I think this was right in 02, 01, 02. And
yeah, it was 02.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so it was a bad year for a lot of reasons. So they charge him with criminally negligent homicide. And just to cut to the chase, he went to jail for 6 months and has a lifetime ban from being in any firehouse. But he's charged criminally, and the reason he went to jail was one question and the answer to it. And the question was, are you familiar with the NFPA standard on live fire and acquired structures? What is it, 1402? Are you familiar with it? They didn't ask, did you comply with it? Answer was, no, I'm not familiar with it. So the DA to the jury says he engaged in an ultra-hazardous activity, and he wasn't even familiar with the national standard. And to be clear to all the listeners, this is not about he didn't comply with the national standard. If he said he was familiar with it and he adopted some of it, he wouldn't have gone to jail. They would have lost a lawsuit, but he wouldn't have gone to jail. He went to jail because he wasn't aware of the national standard. But I'll tell you what's worse. The answer, if it was, are you aware of the national standard, let's say NIMS, which says you have to train with your neighboring departments and agencies. If the answer was yes, but I chose not to do it, You are done. It's over. And if you have not been sued before, it is life-changing in a horrible way. So on top of now, having gone to an active shooter or a scene of violence, having then presumably things didn't go well, like they did recently, right, in a shopping shooting and things like that. If they didn't go well like that, but they went like Uvalde, you're not only dealing with the grief and the embarrassment and your public enemy number one, but now for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you're dealing with a lawsuit. It will never go away. It's like a bad infection, all because you didn't plan and you didn't train constantly. So, you know, every time, as you opened, we feel like we're waiting for the shoe to drop. There's no question it's going to happen again, right? It's a question of whether it's going to be
sure.
your area. And, you know, it's a question of whether it's you. And, you know, one of the things you say in your lecture, which I love, is these aren't big cities. Who ever heard of Columbine, right? I'm stealing your show, but who ever heard of Columbine or Parkland or Sandy Hook?
Oh,
these happened in your area.
Absolutely. And if you paid attention to these events where New York City has shootings, and yes, they had an active shooter in the subway, and Dallas, and Chicago, and L.A., that is not the place where the active shooters with, you know, 20, 30 dead, that's not where they're occurring. And there's some strategicness to that. And based on the response and how the media is very quick to be able to understand what your response is, what it should be, we're advertising the fact that our middle America is not staffed, resourced, trained, and prepared for the event. And you take active shooter out of it, a drive-by shooting, a mass cal of any size or with multiple patients, you have a significant problem, and your risk managers or those that are evaluating your risk that are not categorizing this stuff pretty high are doing a disservice to those that are looking at this. Yes, it's a high risk event, but it's super low frequency.
Gordon Graham,
you shouldn't
here we go.
Even be, yeah, you shouldn't even be looking at frequency because it's not predictable. There are entities that don't staff their fire department properly or based on any kind of national standard. Well, you know, the amount of fires we get are low. Yep. And you are well on your way to breaking headlines to be the next Charleston, South Carolina fire department that
yep.
loses 9
yep.
firefighters in a fire. And right, wrong, or indifferent, you got a lot of things to answer for. And you can bet fingers are going to get pointed, and your only backup is your training records, your policies and procedures. That is your only backup.
That is definitely true. That's definitely true. And, you know, one of the things I got accused, not accused of, people used to say to me is when I was chief, they're like, chief, how many things can we keep doing? How many skills can we keep learning? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not there yet. You have to every day, every moment. If you're eating lunch, hey guys, there's an active shooter right now. Let's practice, and you document it. It matters. The thing I hate seeing, and watch Uvalde, watch any of them. The news is outside, right? And I'm sure you talk about this, but the news is outside. The news normally, except for Uvalde, doesn't see what's going on inside. So the news, who do they see outside? Fire and EMS running around, and yeah, they like to capture guns, but the guns for the most part have gone inside. They're filming the firefighters running around like rabbits with no direction. Ambulances, you know, you could, obviously we know, you either practice for an MCI or you don't. And if you don't practice staging and lining ambulances up and, right, and establishing everything that should happen, it looks like a cluster. And that's what I always see during these mass casualty incidents, whether it's a train wreck or a shooting. Just see the fire and EMS running around in circles, doing nothing outside, waiting for someone to come outside. And that obviously shouldn't be happening, right? We know we should be stacked. We should be waiting. We should be staged. We should have a liaison, all the good things that NIMS teaches us, despite it's boring. But, man, the public perception from day one of firefighters running around in circles is horrible, and you should be embarrassed. So if you're big or small and you're not preparing for this, I mean, the law is one thing, right? Because that's going to go on almost as long as the nightmares. But to not plan, you are just letting your people down. And, you know, everybody should know there's a general duty of every employer to provide a safe place to work. In the fire service, that's hard. In the EMS service, that's hard. In the police department, that's impossible. But we have a general duty. We call it the general duty obligation. The general duty is to provide a safe place to work. And when you breach it, the Department of Labor, OSHA, NIOSH, they all come after you, your local sheriff. If you haven't provided some, right? So they will, as actually, you know, they will come after you, and they will write a report, and it will be scathing, and it will be on the internet. So it will be forever. People realize that if they're not equipped and practiced and trained and policied to death, they're just risking so much more than a lawsuit.
Oh, well, it's like a smoker. Why don't you quit smoking? You know, it causes heart disease, causes cancer. Yeah, it ain't going to happen to me. It's almost a mindset. And there are states, and I'm going to tread carefully here. They have tort laws that limit awards during lawsuits. And so much so that the jury is not advised or can't be read or told about deliberation and whatever they determine. But there are agencies that are like, hey, our tort reform bills or tort reform acts in the state limits the award to $300,000.
Yeah.
So
yep.
They're okay with, if we get a lawsuit, we'll pay the $300,000. They may award $20 million, but all we have to pay is $300,000. And
right.
There are some nuances, very specific nuances, where that tort act will actually not – can be overturned and where the jury, if they award a large settlement, that – the agency or the entity may have to pay it. But as you said before, I think they're kind of blinded where they believe that they have sovereign immunity and I'll be good. Agencies or entities believe, well, we have a reform act. So, you know, tort law means we're only going to pay X. All that might be true to an extent. But do you really understand the nuances of how that actually works and how it blows up in your face? And not to mention, I think you hit it perfectly. Care about your agency, the history of your agency, and what it looks like after you're gone. And if that doesn't stoke your fire, how about you personally, your name, your family name, your legacy, your career? All of that stuff is in significant jeopardy.
You think the Uvalde police chief, ex-police chief, is ever getting a job anywhere again other than maybe as a janitor and probably not even there? Do you think that police chief can go out to a diner? I mean, if I'm him, I'm moving to Mexico or something. He is public enemy number one because of one clip, right? One news shot, him standing there on the cell phone behind a bunch of armed guards or armed cops holding them at bay.
Absolutely.
Life you will live, right? Your life is over at that point. Your career is over, but your life is over. If you're married, my bet is the marriage ain't going to solve that. If you're mentally sane, your mental health isn't going to survive that. And to come out and say, I was never trained in it. You lose as a municipality, you lost as a community. But when I heard that, I'm like, oh my God, failure to train. That is, and I should say something, by the way. Everyone thinks, and to your point where you're saying, oh, people think we have insurance, we have immunity. Guess what? Failure to train escapes immunity. Making a bad decision is one thing, and you will likely, as a government, fire department, or whatever, win a lawsuit, maybe even pretty early, on we didn't do the right thing because it was discretionary. But failure to train ain't protected by most of the immunity statutes. Better train, you better have policies, you better practice the policies, you better adhere to federal law. And if you really do think, if people really do think it's not going to happen to me, or what's the chance, or we're a small volunteer department, we can't prepare, or we don't have resources, or police won't talk to us, whatever it is, you better think. The reason these laws exist is because it's happened so many times the government stepped in and said, we've got to come up with a way, right? I mean, NIMS came out of wildfires, the wildfire service, because so many people are dying. I don't know, playing with fire, but yeah, you had me convinced after I sat in on your session years ago, and then West Webster, I think it happened by that time. Me and my chiefs, co-chiefs, we just made a decision. We're practicing this, and our town was great because I have 7 schools in my school district, or in my fire district. So, you know, we have too many schools, and kids are bringing guns on the bus and all that, but you convinced me. You got to practice this stuff. But if the guilt doesn't get you, if you pushing people to prepare and equip and train and practice doesn't convince you, then let me tell you, being part of a lawsuit over this, being public enemy number one for the rest of your life, I mean, look at the guy. I never saw the movie, but the guy who discovered in the Atlanta, discovered the bomb, I guess, and then they accused him. Right? And they made
Richard
a movie
Jewell.
Out of it. I think
the Olympic,
suicidal.
The Olympic bombing, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, people become suicidal being accused because everybody hates you. You can go nowhere.
Law
is important.
Take it from a law enforcement, perspective. Brian Banks, right? Brian Banks. Yep. Ithaca, New York. He shoots a drug dealer. They have a warrant for his arrest. They go to carry out their parking lot. He smashes a couple of patrol cars, injures a couple of officers, turns his vehicle towards an officer, and revs the engine and starts to try to run him down. And Brian Bangs drew his weapon, shot, and killed him. After ridiculous pains, it was sent to Schuyler County because the local DA recused herself. Sent to Schuyler County. Schuyler County looked at it and said it's a righteous shoot. What happened to Brian Banks? Can't be a cop anymore. People burned down his house. His career is over. His life is over. And he wasn't even wrong in what had occurred. And imagine if he had been wrong. What other things does that individual have to now face and deal with? The legal ramifications, the lawsuits, his family. I mean, good God, it's there.
And let me put the more fear into people, because there's an exception to all the insurance, all the immunity. There's an exception. And the exception is you acted outside the scope of your duty. What you did was not part of your job. Well, wait a minute. If you don't have a game plan on the fire scene and you start doing things which aren't part of your job, for example, maybe you set up a command post and you shouldn't have. Maybe you established EMS and you shouldn't have. Maybe you did whatever. Maybe you ran in, to which I hear firefighters saying, and I'm sure you do all the time, oh, I just run in. So if you act outside the scope of your duty, there's no coverage at all. You are personally liable. No insurance, no immunity, nothing, and many times not even a defense. You are on your own. Your life is over.
Well, and when we have lawsuits like this, right? It's not so Uvalde, just because it's fresh and it's relevant. What you're looking at when a lawsuit comes across, it's very likely to see the city of Uvalde, the Uvalde Independent School District, the Uvalde Independent School Police, the police chief, his number two, his number three, people at the scene, the fire chief, the DPS, senior DPS officer. They're going to name agencies and individuals in the lawsuit. It's not like, oh, well, we're going to sue, City X. No, we're going to sue all kinds of people. We're going to name all kinds of entities. And it's possible for the city to be sued, the chief of an agency to be named as a defendant. And through these processes, hearings, motions, things like that, the city is no longer part of the lawsuit. They've claimed whatever they've claimed before the court, and they are no longer part of the lawsuit. But the other defendants continue through the process and continue through the lawsuit. So the city may go, well, you know, X, Y, and Z. Okay, court's like, okay, good to go. But these chiefs of these agencies, oh, they're still named as defendants. And if whatever that defense is doesn't clear them, well, we proceed forward. That happens, correct?
Oh, let me tell you personally, I think other than Dennis Rubin, I probably must hold the record for the fire chief getting sued as much. But we had a workplace violence incident in my own department, not my people, but somebody came in and made a threat, happened to be a cop, and I reported it to the police, followed our policy, and the fire department gets sued because that cop who made a threat to somebody in my firehouse was terminated. But she sues. Now, you can find us online, but I won't go too much farther. The police also get sued, right? So everybody's getting sued, and then all these other incidents come out about the town police and, you know, whether they were sexually harassing this person or whatever, right? Really bad things against the town. But who's the first freaking person on the front page headline named? Fire Chief Bradley Pinsky sued. And I'm thinking, I have the most minor role and all I do is follow a village policy. And let me tell people, because I sue people every day, send lawsuits 10 times a day against fire departments, et cetera. And yet I had never been a defendant until, of course, I become fire chief and you get sued for everything, as many fire chiefs know. But
well, yeah, it comes
I become a defendant for 7 years. 7 years. You have to live with this. And again, I don't know why the newspaper decided to put me, probably because, frankly, they didn't have the names of anybody else. It was more exciting to put, you know, Bradley Pinsky, fire chief, versus the town of Manlius police. And yet I'm the one on the front page of the paper. It is miserable.
Well, and that comes with the image piece to that as well, if not the idea, not in this case, but – you know, in the case of who are we going to sue? Well, who's on the front page of the paper?
Yeah.
That's who we're going to sue. And that's where the court of public opinion is going to sue you for damn sure.
You will never win.
Yeah. You are correct. You'll never win. And even, well, you mentioned the Lairdsville incident. The average firefighter who's aware of that is aware of it from a standpoint of, you know, the articles and the news and whatever research they decide to pour into it, especially back then. The reporting of that was different, a little different than what you had articulated. And well, you didn't follow 1403. Oh, well, you know what? New York State's not an NFPA state. We don't have to follow that. Court's like, yeah, no, we don't agree with that.
Go to jail, go directly to jail.
Yeah, this is the state the state that doesn't, that is not an NFPA state, it's the state versus the defendant who's saying, wait a minute, you guys aren't an NFPA state. You've been telling me for years you're not an NFPA state. You don't follow NFPA, and you're telling me I'm going to jail because I didn't follow NFPA? No, it's because you didn't read it. It's because you didn't know about it. Because you didn't stay abreast with it.
Right, and the failure to plan is exactly that, right? If you are sitting and listening to the show and you are a firefighter and you're saying, well, we don't have a plan, or I don't know what my plan is, or my favorite one, well, it's secret, only the chiefs know, right? So if you are asking any of those questions, especially if you're the chief, the time is now. Start planning. You better have a plan, or you, every bad thing that we're talking about is coming to you.
Well, moreover, I'd like to add another component to that. Not my problem. Because I hear that one a lot. Not my problem. Well, hey, look, you know, the cops, they're just not, they're not real good with incident command. If we have one of these events, it's not going to go well. They're under-resourced. Name your tagline, doesn't matter. When your leadership goes, not my problem. We're the fire department, it's not my problem. It's absolutely your problem, because we talk about unified command, right? Command is unified. So where is, as you've already said, where's your policies, your procedures, and your training on those policies and procedures for unified command with law enforcement, EMS, and any other stakeholders? Well, it's not my problem.
Well, it is now. Let's talk about Parkland. Right, exactly. And obviously you lecture on this all the time, but, you know, there's more roles than just shooting the bad guy, right? So,
oh, God,
absolutely. Look at Parkland, right, and fire can play, should play so many of those roles, but as I listen to the Parkland shooting, and I listen and I think, and I'm telling people, listen to the early moments of it, because when the students are running out, you're hearing somebody on the radio scream for bolt cutters. And I'm thinking, what? Where is the fire department? And more than that, why are we just figuring it out now? If they planned and they talked about the evacuation route, right? The school knew, I don't know what school knew, but presumably if there had been practicing, interagency practicing and drills, they would have realized somebody needs to cut the damn lock. So these kids aren't sitting there as target practice for somebody. And the fire department's got bolt cutters. So why isn't that in a plan? Why doesn't the fire department know? Why aren't we on the same radios? Why aren't, right, all these whys? We know so much about active shooters now and what happens in the first few minutes and what we could plan for. For the fire department to think that they are not an essential part of planning is ignorance that, and I hate to be the lawyer, but I'm the lawyer, is ignorance that is going to get you sued, you're going to lose, and your name as defendant on a lawsuit will never go away.
Well, I think that's where I think we, as an approach, and it was warranted, and I understand it, but as an approach, We kind of mess this up from the start. So you don't hear of these events, be it where the fire department didn't have tourniquets. The fire department didn't know how to apply a tourniquet, and vice versa for law enforcement. It's not the task level stuff that is causing the failures that are highlighted at these incidents. It's that
the strategy,
command and control, the communication, the planning, that kind of thing. But what we pushed as a fire service for the last 20 years, early access to victims, tourniquets, it's all this task and tactical level stuff. I mean, we pushed tourniquet use till, I mean, it's like, It's crazy. The only thing that people are probably more proficient at besides tourniquet use is calling a mayday. I mean, it's just, it was just drilled and over and over. And it's like, it's a skill. It's a necessary skill, and it's a good skill to have. But in an active shooter, and the ones that we've listed tonight, that skill is – it's not a great skill. You're 15, 20 minutes before you're touching a patient. If you're Uvalde, it's 75 minutes. If a tourniquet was going to save your patient's life, they're dead. They already died. But that was what we pushed. We pushed the access, the treatment, the piece of it. Where we failed, I believe, or failed is a harsh word, where we need to focus our attention is command and control, communications to include dispatchers, and the coordination of agencies to get patients to operating rooms. That, figure that dance out, and you're going to save people, because almost nobody has the ambulance resources necessary to transport all the patients from a Route 91 Harvest Festival shooting. That's 400 patients. If it's Parkland, you know, how quickly can you get ambulances there that are going to transport all those patients? It's not happening. So you're going to use alternative vehicles. Those alternative vehicles may or may not have emergency lights. Do you have a plan to escort them? Is there a way to circumvent that process? And what's the legal ramifications if you know you don't have the resources, in this case ambulances, to transport patients? What's your plan? And as you said, if it's like, well, we don't have a plan, nobody trained me to that, I don't think that that's going to hold water.
No, you're done. And, you know, let me say,
you're done.
I think what – wasn't it Sandy Hook where they got victims out and exit and nobody knew they were over there? And you mentioned radio. I could have the wrong one, but it's one of the earlier ones.
It's not Sandy Hook, because Sandy Hook, they only had two viable patients to transport, and one of them died, and the other lived, had a gunshot wound to the lower extremity. 90% of all of the victims in Sandy Hook were not savable, even if you'd have been in the room.
Okay. So it was before Parkland, but it was one of these mass shootings. It was definitely after Combine, but or maybe it was Combine. But they were talking about the police and victims were at the other end, and there was no EMS there. And so
I know what you're referencing. I know what you're referencing.
Yeah,
I can't recall what it is, but that's the Aurora, Colorado theater shooting where they had victims at Dillard's and they had victims at the front of the theater. And they were calling for ambulances, but there was a communication lag. So law enforcement basically started transporting patients in the back of their patrol cars.
Yeah, and who looked bad? Not the police. Fire and EMS.
No, they were lauded for it.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Police, right? But meanwhile, imagine being the EMT, the firefighter, whoever, who has no idea where people are because don't have interoperable communication, or you don't practice it, or you don't know how to switch the damn channel, or there's no command center, or whatever the reason. So, you know, as you stand alone in the parking lot wondering where everybody is, and they're all around the corner because you didn't know how to communicate, or all of you didn't practice together. You know, when cops are throwing victims in cars, there's a systemic failure that happened long before the shooting. That's what you darn well better get.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because I learned one of these wonderful nuances recently. Patching, radio patching is a wonderful thing. Apparently, if law enforcement has a secure channel and they don't want to share that with the fire department for reasons I understand, but at the same time hurts my head. Dispatch has the ability to patch that secure channel to a fire department unsecured channel by means of the transmission going from the secure channel to the dispatch center, where it becomes unscrambled, patched over to the fire department channel, and you have it, and vice versa. So there are solutions to these things. Because those solutions exist and there's reports, and there's, you know, the there's NIOSH reports for firefighter line of duty deaths. There are endless after action reviews for these events. And if you find yourself being asked to read those or go to a presentation where it's discussed, you better pay attention and take good notes, because the fact that you were there means you were aware, and that there's a liability associated with that, that comes with it. So the nexus of this is you got to plan. You got to have policies and procedures. You got to train to them. And if you don't, just because this event is primarily a high profile law enforcement driven event, it doesn't abscond you from responsibility and what your agency could face. I mean, I cannot fathom being in a Uvalde fire department or their associated EMS agency with that incident. Parkland, Las Vegas, Route 91, which was Clark County, Nevada, fire department was the primary response agency. It's in their jurisdiction because most people don't know that the Las Vegas Strip is not in Las Vegas. Wrap my head around what those individuals and what that agency feels and deals with associated with that event and its high profile and the victim loss and the could we have, should we have, why didn't we, that you deal with when you go to a car wreck with a fatality or a CPR fail. I mean, that scale is just unimaginable to me. I can't process what that does to an agency. And it just, I can't process it. And the heartstrings of being a public servant, we've discussed the need to respond because that's your job. We've covered so many nuances of get in a room and figure this out. And the legal aspect is kind of like the last ditch effort, which in reality should probably have been the first. But I think if you're not understanding what your liability is, call it a save your own ass moment. That's not really what it is, but that's what essentially you'd be doing. But using that as a tool to motivate others to prepare, whether that be agency, whether that be brother or sister agencies, whether that be your local government, whatever it takes. The scars beyond the emotional and the mental aspects at the individual level, the scars of a lawsuit on your agency is epic, especially for something along the lines of this.
And let me finish with this thought. What lawyers in these types of cases end their closing argument with is, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, this isn't just about here. What happened here was a tragedy. What happened here was a travesty. What happened here should never happen again. And I want you to send a message to every fire department, every police department, with this verdict that it should never happen again. And I'll tell you something. The reason for lawsuits is so that things don't happen again. Why do we give big verdicts to the, you know, against all these companies so it doesn't happen again? Why do fire departments get sued and hopefully, you know, they listen? And I'll just do a little promo, you know, whether you listen to Fire Service Court Radio on Fire Engineering or you listen to Kurt Rohn and I every Monday at 1 Eastern Time at on Fire Law Blog and Fire Law Blog. If you go to YouTube, type in Fire Law Blog, you'll see it. But the reason we spend so much time reviewing what's happened to others is so it doesn't happen to you. And juries are asked to give out verdicts of such size so things don't happen to you. And I'll say it another way. The reason there's all these OSHA regs is because OSHA had to step in because we didn't take care of our own house. If you don't take care of your own house, a jury or a government agency or both are going to do it for you. And if you don't care enough about, you know, I don't know what causes you not to want to plan, right? Maybe you're too little of a department. You're thinking we don't have the resources. Well, you do. You got Steve Hamilton. I mean, you've got people who know what to do, how to prepare. I just think the government, the juries, the laws have been sending you all messages. The jury in the Kobe Bryant case sent a $32 million message. If you don't have policies and if you don't enforce policies, things happen and we're going to punish you. So see, the last thing I'll say to you is, you know, for whatever motivates, right, whatever motivates somebody, I hate to be the lawyer and say the lawsuit should motivate you. I don't know how long it takes to recover from one of these incidents, but I'll tell you what, the lawsuit is going to go on for almost as long, and you don't want to be the one who's charged, who's sued, who's convicted if you're a Lairdsville type thing, because, to quote the Uvalde police chief, I was never trained in that. That's just the theme for all bad things to happen. So that's the last thing I'll say. Don't let the lawyer be the one to say, why didn't you?
When the lawyer says, why didn't you? You do not want that question to come from the lawyer that is talking to you while you're on the witness stand. And if you've ever testified in court, I'm confident you never want to do it again. And if you haven't testified in court, take a tip from people who have. You don't ever want to do that, ever. It is there's no fun associated with it whatsoever. Brad, thank you so much for coming on this evening and your insight. And granted, we stuck at a 50,000 foot view. Kind of need to when we're talking national stuff. But if this has sparked an interest in anyone, I encourage you to reach out to legal counsel that is assigned to you through city or state government. Make sure that you are well aware of your liabilities, your responsibilities, and what's expected of you from your position in relation to these types of events, and that you hit those points of write down what you're going to do, train to do it, review it, and adjust it as needed. If you follow those principles, you should be okay. Other than that, again, Brad, thank you so much. I appreciate
Thanks
you
for having
on. Absolutely. You're welcome. You're welcome anytime, my friend, anytime at all.
Thank you.
Forward to seeing you in Indy in April. For those of you who are attending or are planning to attend, absolutely seek Brad and I out, and we will absolutely allow you to buy us an alcoholic beverage of your choosing. Please take this stuff seriously. Tune in next month for Scenes of Violence, and we thank you for tuning in. Special appreciation to Magna Grip for sponsoring things this evening. We will talk to everyone in about 4 weeks. Stay safe, and we'll see you then. Have a good night.